I am here with the great Steve Kornacki. He's, of course, a national political correspondent for NBC News and MSNBC. He's the host of podcast The Revolution, bestselling author, one of People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive. He is kind of everybody's plush toy on election night, makes us all feel comfortable and safe and knowledgeable. He's become kind of a national treasure and an internet sensation. Steve, thanks for being here, man.
Donnie, that's really kind, and I've never been told I make people feel safe before, so I kind of like that.
Well, it is, you know, it's particularly in the last couple of elections, it's particularly stressful for people. You know, there's a lot on the line. Everybody knows that ad nauseum, and whether it's abortion or democracy or, you know, major things. And there's something, you have this, although you're doing this frenetic thing, it's such a calming way because you're so trustworthy, you're so on top of it, that it calms a little bit. I actually kind of notice when you come on the screen beyond leaning in, for me, it relaxes me a little bit. Like, okay, everything's okay. Kornacki's here, you know?
I love it. I'll take it.
So what do you think, if you're going to do a little self-analysis, that in the 2020 election puts you it really in as a sensation? It just hit a nerve. Everything from Leslie Jones ending up with a tremendous crush on you. I know you recently did The Daily Show, to articles written over you, to, you know, as I said, being known as this heartthrob. What do you think happened? Why do you think if you're going to do a self-analysis, what happened? What nerve have you hit?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the old line is there's no accounting for taste. So there's probably something there. It was a weird election. It is one word. There's many words you could use for 2020, but it was one that in many ways, I mean, we're going to have a very unusual one this fall as well. But I think one of the things that made 2020 so unusual, so weird, was just how long it took to really get all the results. And that was, a lot of that had to do with COVID, a lot of, you know, changes that year in some of the important swing states to their voting laws, to allow for mail-in voting, to allow for extended early voting. And they just, in a lot of cases, they either had antiquated laws that they failed to update, or they just had never gone through this before. And it created a process where they were, you know, the day after the election, they still hadn't counted millions of ballots. And it was in some of those states, as you all remember, I'm sure, it was a very, very slow process. So it was like that Polaroid picture used to take, where it would take a while to come into focus. You know, it was like on Tuesday, we see a little bit, on Wednesday, a little bit more. And it really took till the end of the week, till Saturday morning to get the full picture. So I just think it was, you know, and I was in a position where I could kind of narrate that for people, kind of blow by blow. And, you know, I don't, you know, everyone remembers, I certainly do, the 2000 election. You know, that night was chaotic. It gets called for Bush. It gets, you know, called for Gore. It's all over the place. And Tim Russert was kind of the figure who kind of, you know, from the media side, who really kind of emerged from that. And he had that famous whiteboard.
It was a little simpler than what you do. A little bit simpler.
And that was not that long ago, I tell people. But, you know, again, that was sort of a chaotic night. And then it became something different for 40 days because it was a court case. But in the case of 2020, it went on for five nights.
Just try to understand how your brain can do what it does. What astounds me is it'll be some random county in Vermont, and you just have just an encyclopedic knowledge of every county in every map. Explain how you actually can do that. It seems almost inhuman.
I know a lot about a little and nothing about a lot.
Yeah, like you didn't know who Taylor Swift was.
It's honest. I'm oblivious to
right.
I am oblivious to things that that people are otherwise extremely familiar with. So it, you know, it just so happens for whatever reason, I do think my mind has always kind of, you know, worked well with or understood things through numbers. I can remember that, you know, from a young age, just it would always help me understand something. If I could put a number on it and compare it to something else, put a number on that. And it just helped me make sense of things, sort things out. And that definitely, you know, when I was a kid, I was kind of applying that to sports, to box scores, to that sort of thing. And, you know, I got interested in politics and, you know, elections. It's a lot of the same kind of muscle memory. If you're following, you know, NBA box scores every day or something.
Which I do.
Yeah, no, I mean, so it's a lot of that's, there's a lot of overlap there when you start looking at election stats, and I like it too. It's fun because,
well, you handle it like a sporting event. I mean, to the point where they got you on Sunday Night Football, the Olympics. I mean, it's a horse race, and you say that unapologetically.
Yeah, no, because I think it's the one that I always tell people. You know, I feel like this is an incredibly polarized era. Tribalized is the word, probably.
I mean, your book really,
there's a backdoor way to get a plug for my book in, but I hope at least that what I do is one of those like kind of islands that both sides can coexist on, because the one thing they have in common is they each want to know if their side's winning, if their side's losing, what their side needs to do to win, why their side might be losing. And that's, you know, that's what I hopefully provide.
My favorite Kornacki moment, and we get to catch them because there's Kornacki cam, was when I think it was Rachel went to you and said, Steve, I asked a very obviously minutiae question, and you had 90,000 papers on your desk. Oh, yeah. And so on the one hand, we got to see somebody who was just like us. Oh my God. But then you just lasered in and somehow found the piece of paper and the piece of information. That was astounding.
Well, it was one of those. I remember, that was Arizona, and they on election night, they released like 2/3 of their vote right away. And then the rest takes like 5 days. So I knew this was going to be a thing when Arizona's polls closed, what that first report was in 2022. And I wanted to compare it to what that first report was in 2020 to see if there was any movement. So I knew I had written it down. I knew I had done the research. And I also had that, I probably had about 60 pieces of paper there. And I was like, God, can I find this in the next 10 seconds? And it was a bit of luck, but I looked down and I was like, oh yeah, there's the green pen. I know where it is.
I love it. Let's get into the election a little bit. Obviously it looks like we know who our two candidates, anything can happen in terms of health or obviously Trump's convictions and things. But you're seeing a lot of different dynamics in this election that we saw in 2020, particularly at the expense of Joe Biden.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest difference is the obvious one. If you look at all the polling from 2019, 2020, Biden versus Trump, I mean, we polled it at NBC.
He was up at like 6% at this point, right?
Trump never trailed by fewer than 6 points in our poll. Trump trailed. Yeah, Biden, yeah, led. Yeah, Biden, yeah, never, yeah, led by fewer than six. Right. And the lead got as high as 14 in our polling. And that was, we were no outlier. Everybody was finding, you know, the same thing. If you remember, there was a Wisconsin poll from ABC about 3 weeks before the 2020 election that had Trump down 17 in that state.
Yeah.
He lost by 20,000 votes. So this time around, we're seeing polls, our own included, that have Trump ahead. And that's like, from a polling standpoint, that's uncharted territory for Trump.
And for an incumbent also to be this far down, to be down this far along.
And I think that's the problem Biden and the Democrats are running up against here. It's like, it's the flip of the roles here. Trump was the incumbent in 2020. Any frustration, any exasperation with him, Biden was just the obvious protest vehicle. Now there's frustration that exists with Biden as well. There's dissatisfaction, deep dissatisfaction that exists with Biden. So in some ways, Trump is collecting all of that. You could certainly argue he's not collecting as much of it as a sort of generic Republican would, because Trump has his own limitations, his own vulnerabilities, but he's definitely collecting some of it. And we're seeing some shifts, you know, younger voters, non-white voters, younger and non-white voters. We're seeing some shifts away from Biden and even toward Trump that really are kind of brand new.
Yeah, his base is, it's been talked a lot about, is shaky. Obviously, the Israeli war is hurting him with young people. It's hurting with people of color. Obviously, we've got Michigan, which obviously is going to be such a crucial state with 300,000 Arab Americans. He's got his challenges. The one thing that you said is interesting in the polls, in that you think a lot of people are saying, okay, well, once Trump gets convicted, you know, in the South Carolina polls, 25% said it would disqualify him or make him, you know, unfit for office. You're saying maybe that in the polls, people are giving what they think is a politically correct answer, but might not, just like many other times with Trump, when we think there's a watermark, he can't come back from. You said, no, he just always goes back to the mean.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things that come to my mind, but the first one is just, I kind of think we lived through this with Trump in his first campaign in 2016. Because I look at it this way, if you had taken a poll, let's say in the summer of 2016, and described the contents of the Access Hollywood tape and said, you know, if this comes
disqualifying. Out. Disqualifying. Right. 90% of people would say no, disqualifies
right.
him.
Yeah. Anyway, right. Who would you vote for, Clinton or Trump? Yeah. Yeah. And so then it did come out. And it happened to be, it was almost like a great political science experiment, because it literally happened to come out the first day NBC was in the field with a poll in October 2016. And we saw this happen, or the second day, I think it was, because we saw it happen where the first day Trump was down 7 points to Clinton. That was kind of his standard deficit in 2016. And over the next 2 days, it exploded. I think it got as high as 19, came down a little bit in the third day. And on the final day, it was back at seven. So yeah. It was like in the span of 3 days.
Amazing.
These voters worked through all the motions and got back to baseline. And I until proven otherwise, I think that's my default assumption of what would happen, even if there's a felony conviction.
And obviously the polls is Biden. We see so much. He's old. But beyond that, what is your take? And I don't know if there's anything, the numbers are going to show this, that why the good stuff doesn't stick. He's the unstickiest president in the entire world. You know, by most, just about every other economic metric other than inflation, and inflation has cooled. He's had a winning hand. Yet when it comes to the issues of economy, he still gets horrible marks and gets beaten dramatically by Trump.
I think one of the things I guess to keep in mind on inflation is even when it cools, even when it stabilizes, the prices don't go down. So I think, you know, when you talk about inflation, it takes a while for the sting of that to kind of go away for people. So even if it is cooling now, I don't know that people are going to answer or immediately say, oh, yeah, this is great. Inflation's done, because they're still remembering what it was 3 years ago.
They're still paying 15% more than they used to pay, right?
Right. So I think on inflation, that's a big part of it. And it's also, you know, his how do you say it? It is like his public visibility is fairly limited. Exactly what's going on there in terms of behind the scenes, I don't know, you know, whether that's related directly to age or anything, but I think his public visibility is limited.
Yeah, and that was a mistake keeping him out of the Super Bowl, because that was a relatively, I mean, it would have been Gayle King or Norm O'Donnell, not an adversarial place to be. And the fact that they shut him down there was a bad signal to people.
And really I think it indicates, too, that they see his folks see 2024 as, in their view, they plan to repeat 2022. In 2022 midterms, when, you know,
anybody was in the basement. Red wave,
fizzled. And what you saw ultimately were, you know, kind of there were swing voters out there who were ready to vote Republican. We saw this in some states, but they wouldn't vote for the Trump aligned Republican candidates in 2022. And so there's a, you know, I think the Biden folks think that when it comes to it, it may not be that the sale is for Biden. It may just be that those voters look at Trump, can't do it, and go back to Biden. I think that is what they're banking on.
You've also said abortion, although obviously a huge issue, will not be the issue the way it was 4 years ago. But I kind of find that counterintuitive, being that we've had Roe overturned. So
I say that because I think it definitely matters when you're talking about a special election or any kind of election that has lower turnout than a presidential general election, which was 160 million people in 2020. Right. But when it's lower turnout, which groups are most motivated really, really matters. And so Democrats have been excelling in all of these special elections.
Special elections, yeah.
We said they had a very good 2022. So I do think, especially in special elections, it plays a role just from a motivation standpoint. But from a persuasion standpoint, I think the politics of abortion had largely sorted themselves out already. That is to say, the folks most activated and most motivated on the pro-choice side had already kind of sorted themselves behind Democratic candidates, the folks most activated and motivated on the pro-life side, Republican candidates. And so the example that sticks in my head is 2022 in Georgia. Again, I think we had a really interesting test, because you had two Republican candidates running statewide there. You had Brian Kemp, the incumbent governor, and you had Herschel Walker, the candidate for Senate. And this was just months after Roe had been overturned, and they had the exact same position on abortion. You know, Kemp had signed the 6-week ban in Georgia, and Walker said he supported it. And if you're voting on abortion, the one you care more about is the governor's race, because that's where the law is now coming from. It's at the state level. And yet Kemp won by almost 10 points and Walker lost. And I think the differentiating factor was Trump. It was the Trump factor, because Walker was Trump's handpicked candidate. He was aligned at the hip, joined at the hip with Trump. And Kemp, meanwhile, was the guy who signed off on the 2020 election results in Georgia, set Trump on fire. He recruited, you know, a former U.S. senator who challenged Perdue in the Republican primary in 2022. Perdue beat him. And I think there was a voter there in the suburbs of Atlanta, a voter that, you know, wanted to vote against the Democrats. And because Kemp was separate from Trump in their minds, they were happy to vote for Kemp.
They were happy to do it.
But they looked at Walker and they saw Trump and they couldn't do that.
They couldn't do it. You talked about special election a couple of weeks ago. We had one in the 3rd District in New York where Swazi took Santos' seat, beat a what many thought was a very appealing Republican candidate. Obviously, turnout was subdued because of the weather. But what else did you see in that election that could be a precursor for 2024?
It gets again to that turnout question, because there's the folks in a row contributed to this. But I do think that obviously the biggest contributor here has been Trump over the last 8-9 years. And it's this type of voter that college educated white voters is the simplest way to describe them. Often in the suburbs, often with higher incomes, you could qualify it a bunch of different ways. But college educated white voters as a group used to be a core Republican group. And even in 2012, voted for Mitt Romney by 14 points. Over Barack Obama. Fast forward just 8 years later, 2020, college-educated whites voted for Joe Biden by 15 points. It's a swing of nearly 30 points in just 8 years. And that district, that third district of Long Island, is chock full of white voters with college degrees.
Right. I grew up in Bayside, Queens, right there next to Douglas.
There's that north-south divide. Yeah. So it's interesting, the district, because the northern part of the district, which is the wealthier, more affluent, more college-educated side, the five Long Island towns in the district with the highest concentrations of white college-educated adults, all had turnout levels that were about 75% of the 2022 midterm level. The five Long Island towns with the lowest share of white college-educated voters had turnout levels that were about 55-60% of 2022. Huge turnout disparity. And I think that was the single biggest factor there, is that anti-Trump, college-educated, suburban vote is just absolutely on fire right now. They're not waiting for general elections. They are looking for every and any election they can find to vote against Trump, to vote against the Republican Party. And in these lower turnout affairs, it's giving Democrats a huge, huge advantage.
So some of the polls, and my friend Joe Scarborough was pushing back this morning on this, saying, you know, I don't believe it. I think it's going to settle where it always does, is saying that Biden is really struggling with voters of color, the African-American vote. What are you seeing in the crosstabs that's telling you that's happening and why?
So it's definitely happening, you know, with Hispanic voters, and we established that in 2020 when Trump made huge, huge strides. Yeah. And it was, you know, particularly South Florida, particularly the border in Texas, but it wasn't just there. I could give you examples in totally non-competitive states where you saw that. We saw that number that Trump kind of attained in 2020 with Latinos basically stabilize in 2022. So it didn't go back to the Democrats, but it didn't increase further. Now, in our polling, we're seeing it increase further. Our most recent NBC poll among Latinos, we have it tied. This is a group that was
Democrats. You know, Democrats are not winning an election if they're tying into the Hispanic vote. I mean, it's that simple.
What you're also seeing, I think, that's alarming to Democrats, you know, definitely for 24, but really big picture, longer term, is that this
that's where the growth is. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And what we've seen among white voters, what I was just describing, this gap between white college educated, Democratic, white non-college, increasingly Republican, that divide, we're now starting to see that among Hispanic voters, where you have Hispanic voters without college degrees, that swing to Republicans is a lot more dramatic. Hispanic voters with college degrees, it's a lot less dramatic. But since Democrats were winning overwhelmingly with the Hispanic vote before all this, any slippage is bad news for them. And if the non-college component of the Hispanic vote folds into the Republican tent, that's a huge net loss for Democrats.
And some of the polls have the African-American vote at 20%. It's hard to describe any group as a monolithic vote, but what are you seeing there that's causing that?
Yeah, I take that one more skeptically and as much less kind of proven than the Hispanic vote, because every election, it seems, we do see polls that will put...
And then it goes back to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%.
Yeah, right. There's not since... You got to go back to 1960 to find a Republican presidential candidate who won 20% or more of the black vote. And not even, generally not even close. Yeah. But to the extent that there is a shift there, or maybe a shift there, the place I would look is a gender divide, you know, black men versus black women, because we just see this in general, men moving more towards, you know, the Republican Party and women going the opposite direction. And if you start to see that same degree gap I'm talking about, you know, with whites and Hispanics, does that start to emerge, you know, in the black community as well? But that's less... That's more theoretical. It could happen, and if it does, it's significant, but it's more theoretical.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, I'm Kate. And I'm Corinne. We host the podcast Pop Fiction Women, and our tagline is, we're complicated. What does that mean exactly? To us, it just means real, three-dimensional human beings with contradictions and conflict who also happen to be women. On this podcast, we engage in the simple but subversive act of taking women seriously. Whether it's a discussion of a classic rom-com or current hit movies written and directed by women, like Barbie or Saltburn, you can be sure we'll bring our own dynamic spin. And we recap some of the buzziest TV shows like Succession, White Lotus, and Yellowjackets. We also discuss book-to-TV adaptations like Daisy Jones, Tell Me Lies, Expats, Fleischman, and The Last Thing He Told Me. We give you a seat at the table with your favorite New York Times bestselling authors in our Complicated Conversation series, and we introduce you to the next rising star in our debut discussions. In both interview formats, we always ask the most important question of all, what's your sign? Subscribe or follow Pop Fiction Women wherever you get podcasts.
Let's put on the soothsayer Kornacki hat. If you were going to say, if I was going to say, give me a state or two that is a swing state we see it as, but you see it maybe not being a swing state, and conversely, something that is either traditionally entrenched blue or red that may turn into a swing state. Do you see any surprises on the state level as far as swing state, non-swing state? I mean, swing state, non-swing state.
Yeah, I don't see any huge shocks. I don't know if this one counts as a surprise anymore, but the one that I've been keeping an eye on is Nevada, you know, yeah. Which, you know, did not vote for Trump in 16 or 20, but he did bring the margin down to 2.5 points each time. And that's one of those places, there's a lot of white voters without college degrees. And that's a place where, you know, his campaign believes if this further growth with Hispanics is real, Nevada flips. So that's the most obvious one that it was never a Trump state in 16 or 20 that could become one. And on the other side, in terms of Biden pulling in any new territory from 20, you know, I can't really see that. The one that what's interesting is Trump, if he's going to get to 270, barring something totally rabbit out of the hat, he's got to win one of those three, you know, Midwest,
Rust
Pennsylvania.
States, right.
And the one that I think is most interesting right now is Michigan.
Sure.
For the reasons you were saying, and it's interesting because while Trump won Michigan in 16, it really, of all those three, swung the hardest back to Democrats in 2020.
It went from 10,000 votes to Trump to a couple hundred thousand, right. I think, over for Biden, right?
Right. And yet the polling now pretty consistently out of there is some, you know, alarm signs for Biden. So
how much of that is the Arab American vote?
I think it could be. And, you know, that's a variable that exists. It's kind of a Michigan specific variable. But it's also, you know, there is a very large non-white college population there, you know, in Michigan, those small counties, you know, north of Saginaw, north of Bay City, they're individually tiny, but they add up. And we saw Trump gain, you know, 20, 30 points over Romney there, if they're really on fire for turnout, you know, and then the other, you know, Democrats aren't getting what they used to out of Detroit. You know, the population in Detroit has dropped so much, but Democrats also, you know, there are some turnout potential signals of turnout trouble for them, you know, in places like Detroit among, you know, particularly among black voters. And if that materializes and the balance, you know, the balance of the electorate shifts a bit in the white non-college direction, makes a big difference.
Without Michigan, what's Biden's path?
Got to win. I think for him, then he'd have to win an Arizona or a Georgia. And both of, you know, he won Arizona by, I think, 9,700 votes, and he won, you know, Georgia by, you know, 11,000 plus in 2020. Very, very slim margins. And in each state, you know, it was a pretty big deal that a Democrat won them. But I guess if you look at it from the Electoral College standpoint, you know, Biden got 306 in 2020. Now, the first thing that happens is we had the census, you reapportion, states have different Electoral College amounts. So under the new map, the exact same result state by state now would give Biden only 303 electoral votes.
Interesting. Work, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And if you work backwards from that, you know, and you take an Arizona out, 303 becomes 292. Take Georgia out, 292 becomes 276. Then you take any one of those Midwestern states out.
That's it.
And you're under that number. So I think he's got to then hang on to one of those two.
What do you see? A stat that blew me away is that voters 18 to 34 are now kind of evenly split Republican and Democrat. I almost fell off my chair when I saw that.
It's another one, you know, there's a, to the extent it's real, it's gender. And it's young males shifting in pretty surprised numbers to Trump and to the Republicans. And it's young females who were already, you know, extremely Democratic, becoming probably on the whole more Democratic, but there's not as much room for growth there for Democrats because they were already so Democratic. So that's the thing you're seeing in the polling now. Whether I'm skeptical whether you'll actually see like a tie race among young voters in November, but if Trump even, you know, cuts, you know, makes inroads there, it's all a bonus for him because that was such a lost demographic.
We look at the polls and we all caveat and say they're just polls, it's a snapshot, and take them for what they're worth. You've already laid out one thing in a poll that you're suspect about as far as Trump's vulnerability being a conviction that people. What other answers are you seeing in polls now that are telling us something that you go, I really got a skeptical eye of that. Let's watch and see how that happens.
Well, I think just a lot of these things we're talking about when it comes to young voters, as we said, when it comes to non-white voters, I think the thing is this. What I was just describing a few minutes ago, this Democratic turnout edge in the special elections, we know that that segment of the electorate, white college educated Democratic, is absolutely on fire. And we know that Democrats can count on every last one of them to turn out in November. A lot of these groups where Trump is showing some surprising strength, it's on the backs in polls of voters who aren't turning out in special elections, who didn't turn out in the 2022 midterm election. But, you know, presidential elections, that's the one, you know, that brings doesn't bring everybody out, but brings the most people out. So the Trump campaign, to make these polls a reality, is counting on a voter who, it's a 1 in 4 voter at best. Once every 4 years, they vote. And some of them, not even that. And that's what the Trump campaign is hoping for. So they're the polls, you know, are showing what they're showing, and it's different. But to make the polls a reality, it's going to require turnout from voters who currently, you know, aren't turning out. And that the one, I think, big variable hanging over all of this is just what is the overall turnout going to be in this election? Because we say it was 160 million in 2020, which is just an astronomical level.
I can't see it being less.
Right. I mean, well, I see it. I think there's some evidence it will be less.
Really?
Yeah. And we're in a strange situation that we're not used to.
I guess so. Yeah. As I talked to you out loud, there's a lot of disenfranchised voters. They don't like either choice. Yep. So yeah, that was stupid of me to say. Yeah.
No, it's at this point, it's counterintuitive because we're used to everybody being super, super political. And I don't think it'll be low, but I suspect it could be lower, you know, than 2020 by a fair amount. And the new dynamic that we're not used to is, as I just said, the Republicans are the ones now who benefit, it would seem, from the higher turnout. The Democrats, with this core base I'm describing, the lower the turnout gets, the more influence that core base is going to have. So I think that's the big X factor. How much does that turnout fall from 20? And I don't know what the number is, but at a certain level, if it falls enough, there's a real turnout advantage there for Democrats from that college-educated block I'm talking about.
There's one issue that, to me, is such a hard issue to get your arms around. And to me, it's the issue, democracy. But I find when I talk to people, even very educated people, and I say, you know, our democracy is on the line. Do you understand if Trump wins, and I'll start to go through a litany of things of how the world could and would change? I don't think that's hitting with the average voter. I think to your earlier point, they're looking at their grocery bills. How do the Democrats make that an issue that matters?
Yeah, again, I don't think it's really a persuasion issue because, I mean, again, our most recent poll, we went through a whole set of issues and said, who would you prefer on issue X? And on, I think we phrased it protecting democracy, or it might have just been democracy, but it was a Democratic advantage of 2 points.
So That's so insane.
What it shows you, though, is that it's depending on where you are politically, you just interpret that question and that issue very differently. So when it comes to that, I do think we saw this in 22 in the midterms, that was a motivating issue for those voters I was describing, like in Georgia, who could vote for Kemp, but who couldn't vote for Walker. Mm-hmm. I think January 6th had an awful lot to do with that. And, you know, that is a thing that, you know, Democrats are counting on being a thing in 24 as well, keeping that same voter away from Trump. And maybe, as I said, if the turnout is not hitting the 160 million level, maybe that type of voter is a little more influential than they were in 2020.
If you could right now see three counties and say, if I saw the numbers in these three counties right now, I could really get a handle on where the world's going to be. What were those three counties you'd like to see right now? That if I saw this there, I know then X is Y.
The obvious one in Arizona is Maricopa County.
Right.
It makes up more than half the state. And when Biden won it in 2020, he was the first Democrat to win it since 1948. So, yeah, if Biden's not winning Maricopa again, he's not winning Arizona.
Right.
I think in Michigan, there's a couple places. I guess the one that I'd be most interested in is Macomb County. That's the big blue collar suburb north of Detroit. There's two big suburban counties next to each other, Macomb and Oakland. Oakland's the white collar. Macomb is the blue collar. Now, Trump flipped. It was Macomb had been going Democratic, and Trump flipped it in 16. And he still won it in 2020, but by a little smaller margin. So I think Macomb is sort of a test for Trump. Can he jack up the margin in Macomb County from where it was in 2020? And I think that will go a long way to answering the Michigan question. And I think this Nevada question. Well, you know what? I won't say Nevada because the reality with Nevada is it's six electoral votes and it's actually kind of hard to construct an electoral college scenario where Nevada becomes the swing state.
Right.
So I think then you do have to look, you probably do have to look at Georgia and, you know, which one of those counties, it's one of those sort of counties right outside of Atlanta, right outside of Fulton County. The one that flipped, they've all been becoming more and more Democratic. Population changes, population growth. The one that flipped the most recently, Republican to Democrat, is just southwest of Atlanta, Fayette County. Mm-hmm. And so I think I look at that one. Does that flip back?
Good answer. All right, last question. And I know what your answer is going to be. And I'm not asking you to predict the election because it's not what you do, and nor would you do it. But if you look at everything right now, as a snapshot today, what you're seeing in polls, what you know about polls, Steve Kornacki, how would you handicap the election today based on what you are seeing today, based on even your skepticisms? Well, put it all in that bowl. Are we 50-50? Are we 52-48? Well, where do you, if I was to ask you to handicap it, I put it, there's an expression, gun to your head. You know, gun to your head, you got to make the call.
What I've been telling people is, you know, it sounds like a cop-out, but it's a coin toss. That's how I'm
I knew you were going to say it. It kind of is. I mean, you know, there's
no other way to do it. With the bold picks.
With the bold prediction, it's a coin toss. No, by the way, I say the same thing to people, and I don't have 1/100th the knowledge you have. You just, everything you feel, and you feel. What I believe, though, is that we are going to live through history. The combination of the trials, what's going on with age, maybe one of them has a health issue. I just think the world is going to shift a bunch of times in ways we haven't seen it shift between a February and a November. That's just my gut. That's my, as a behaviorist, I see unforeseen things that are going to just change the landscape as we see it now. I don't see it's going to be as it is now.
No, I think it's going to be an eventful 8 months here. And there are variables at play in this election. Outside of all the demographic stuff we're talking about right here, there are bigger picture variables that we just haven't seen. I mean, you talk about age. I mean, the combined age of these two candidates 4 years ago was a lot. Now it's even more the novelty of a defeated former president coming back trying to win the job back. You haven't seen that. There's no modern example that we can really say learn anything from. You got to go too far back. Pre-media age to see that. So there's that. There's the legal stuff around Trump. There are huge variables here that I'm the kind of person that loves to look back and say, okay, I think we've seen this before. Here's what we can learn from it. I think we've seen this. And I have a hard time with some of these things, finding anything we can point to in the past and say, there's a way to understand it.
Steve Kornacki, you are so spectacular at what you do. There are very few people I think are irreplaceable. You're one of them. I don't know when your deal is up with NBC, but hold them up for a lot of money because you are priceless. And thanks for all you do for us. You're just great at your craft, and you up the whole game for everybody.
Donnie, thanks a lot. I'm going to clip that last line and send it to my agent.
Send it to Rashida, okay? Stay well, my friend. Thank you so much. I'll see you on Morning Joe.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.